All right, so we are in Psalm 90. And this psalm is unique in several different ways. But one of the ways it is unique is that it is written by Moses. And this is the only psalm in the book of Psalms that is written by Moses. And it's probably the only psalm that was written before the kind of the time frame of David. Most of them were written kind of in that time frame, even beyond that. Solomon, I think, wrote one or two of Psalms. So this is, I think we could safely say, the oldest song in the Hebrew Psalm book. So we'll be looking at that. And there's kind of no certainty on this, but my guess is that Moses wrote this psalm during the time of the 40 years of wilderness wanderings. And so we'll kind of look at this psalm through that lens and through those eyes. And I think we'll see a lot of neat connections to his original audience, if they were in fact those who were kind of dying off in the wilderness before they got to the promised land. So we'll just kind of take it one section at a time. I think I've broken it into three different sections. Verses 1 through 6 is kind of comparing God versus man. And then verses 7 through 12 talks about the wrath of God, or the anger of God towards sin, causing us, verse 12, causing us to number our days and to have a heart of wisdom. And then it ends in 13 through 17 with kind of a prayer. This is Moses's prayer to God on behalf of the people. So Moses, of course, was the great kind of intercessor between God and the nation of Israel. So we'll see a little bit of that in the ending of this psalm. This is one of my favorite psalms in the book. A lot of very practical and helpful things for us to think about, always helpful to think about. So let's go ahead and read together verses 1 through 6, and I'll read from the ESV translation. It says, "Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, 'Return, O children of man.' For 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. You sweep them away as with a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers." All right, so verses 1 and 2 kind of detail, talk about the eternal aspect of God. And then 3 through 6 kind of talk about the extreme temporariness, if that's a word, of man, how temporary man is, especially when you look at compared to God. So he starts this psalm in verse 1 by saying, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. So maybe we wouldn't necessarily use that language. Maybe we don't invite people and say, "Hey, would you like to come to my dwelling place to eat?" We may say home, and that may be more ringing true to us, but you kind of see that picture. Lord, you have been our home in all generations. So it's talking about how God is changeless. He is the same forever, for all generations. God is ever, from everlasting to everlasting. That's kind of Alpha, Omega. He's always, always has been, always will be. And then notice in verse 2, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting you are God. So the mountains would kind of represent the oldest, what would you say, the oldest fixtures, I don't know, here on earth. You might say, well, what about a building? Well, a building can come and go, come and fall, but a mountain, it's hard to kind of move a mountain. So even before the mountains were here, even before the mountains were formed, you were there. And now as we think about how these opening two verses, how would they sound to Moses' generation in the wilderness? So you are our dwelling place. Now, for these people living in the wilderness, what would their dwelling place be? It would basically be a tent. That was their home. And so they really didn't have a permanent dwelling place at all. It says, but God, you are our home. Remember, they don't know if they are moving that day or not. It just depends on that cloud, or that pillar of cloud by day, or the fire by night. If that cloud moves or the fire moves during the night, they get to move with it. So you really see that temporary dwelling place that they had. But even though they did not have a physical permanent dwelling place, this is my home, God was their home. So just from the very beginning, even though I'm changing, even though I am a pilgrim journeying through these many years from one wilderness spot to another, I can have God as my dwelling place. God is my foundation, my strength in that. So you just kind of see the permanence of God and how God is a fixture, kind of a foundation point in their life. So before we jump into how very temporary man is compared to that, and any thoughts or comments that you had just on those kind of opening two verses? All right, well, let's press on. So 3, 4, 5, and 6 kind of serve as a contrast to God being from everlasting to everlasting. So let's just keep going, and then we'll look at kind of the contrast, or what this might have meant to Moses' generation. So he says, you return man to dust and say, return, O children of men. So remember all the way back in Genesis, I think chapter 2, that God made man from dust. So that's humbling, isn't it? We are made but of dust, and we're going to return to dust. And that is maybe referencing the curses that God put on man because of sin. If you look at Genesis 3:19, remember this is to Adam. He says, by the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So if you think about the people in the wilderness, you think about what they witnessed during those 38, 40 years of traveling, 40 years kind of from Red Sea to the Promised Land, maybe 38 years or so in the wilderness. But what was going on just about all of the time? It would be death, right? Just about every person died in the wilderness. 20 years and up, they died, and they left a younger generation to go into the Promised Land. So these people really saw that, and you know, you return man to dust and return, O children of man. And why was that? Well, it was because of their lack of faithfulness in God. Remember when Caleb and Joshua came back from spying out the land, and they come back with the message of, man, this, they're giants. The land is really, really good, but we can take them because we have God on our side. And so we need to go into this land and take it for our own. Well, that was contradicted by the other 10 spies who said, there's no way that we can win. So I think it's best maybe just go back to Egypt. And so when they heard Joshua and Caleb's, let's go into the land, they saw that as a death sentence. So, well, here's Joshua and Caleb trying to kill us. Well, God didn't take very well to that assessment and said, okay, well, since you didn't believe in me, you're going to die. Your children will inherit the land, but everyone 20 and up will not. So if you're a numbers guy, I think there's probably, I don't know, you'd probably better than I am, but over a million, we could safely say that, I think, over a million Israelites in the wilderness, and then if you want to divide that by, I don't know, 38 times 365, and then divide that, I don't know, do some math, all you math people, but there's a lot of funerals per day, if they, just kind of making that point. So that's something that they are seeing just again and again, and you have God doing that. Well, why do we die? Well, it's not necessarily for the same reason of, I don't think we can take the giants, but it's all due to sin, going back to Genesis 3. And so we are kind of in the same boat as they are. And then you get this time span looking at God's perspective in verse 4. For 1,000 years in your sight, in God's sight, are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. I don't know if you're kind of like me, and if someone asks you, well, what did you do yesterday? I say, oh man, I don't know, I can think back that far. And I try to think about some of the things that happened during the day, but all in all, it went by pretty fast. Well, that's like 1,000 years to God. My favorite reference between the two is like a like yesterday when it is past, or it's like a watch in the night. Now, so understand there are about 3 or 4 watches during the night. So the day would basically start at 6 a.m. and end at 6 p.m. And the first watch would be from 6 to 9 to 12, and then 12 to 3, so forth. But if you get into like a watch in the night, most people are sleeping during that, you know, third watch. at least I hope, 12 to 3. How fast does that go? You know, well, while you're sleeping, man, it goes by super fast. And you wake up like, man, am I awake already? Well, that's like 1,000 years to God. So again, you see that idea of God is from everlasting to everlasting. We, made of dust, return to dust. And let's think about our time on earth. Looking at verses 5 and 6, a generation goes with the flood. I don't know what year it was. It was pre-Cawthon family to Nashville when that giant flood came to Nashville. But you just kind of probably picture that if you were here for that event. You probably see it on the news, but you just see everything just kind of going with a flood. Nothing can stop it. And you are at great risk, even if it's, you know, 2 or 3 inches going over a road, like don't drive because you can't stop that. You can't stop that momentum. Well, maybe kind of the same idea. We are not going to put up much resistance to this idea of we're not going to die. You know, it's like a flood. A generation just kind of goes with the flood. And then to make us think even more proudly of ourselves, it says we are like grass. And in the morning, it flourishes and then gets towards nighttime and goes away. That's how long we live. One day. Less than a day, right? Morning to evening. And then he says, our life, well, just kind of thinking about that, just how short our time is here on earth. And for me, the older you get, the more this rings true. Time just keeps going more and more quickly. You know, kind of in the younger years, we kind of, someone asked, how old are you? And maybe Hannah or Benjamin say, well, I'm 5 and a half. Luke, we might say, we might break it down into, well, he's about 18 months. I quit doing that. I don't tell people how many months old I am because it just keeps going quicker and quicker. My mom says, man, I used to think 70 was really old. And now I don't think that anymore. And I said, well, Mom, it is. It's okay. But it still is old. But you kind of get the idea that the more years you go, it seems like the faster they go. So just kind of thinking about that idea. And you've all seen this to be true. It's kind of, I don't know, it'd be considered a wisdom poem, but it's kind of presenting some very factual things that we can see and think about. Since that is true, you know, since life goes by so quick, since we're like grass, we're here in the morning, we're gone in the evening, we're like a flood, a generation just kind of goes. How should that affect us? Well, how should that impact us? Well, certainly, we should be very thoughtful about how we use our time. Our time is really the greatest resource that we have. And the more we value our time, the better we should use that time. We're not going to be wasteful with it, because we're understanding, man, we don't have that long here on earth. And I think that's easier to do maybe the older you get. As a young person, I didn't really think about you know, life here on earth is kind of short. I mean, I got lots of life left in me. But really kind of thinking about these things and talking to other people, you see, yeah, life is short. Therefore, how am I using this time that God has given me? And just remembering that we don't get any days back. If we wasted a day, we can't earn that day back. It's gone. It's gone forever. So someone said, and I like this idea, therefore, we should invest in things that neither moth nor the thief can take away from us. Don't invest in so much about the things on this earth, because it's just going to melt away. It's going to go away. There's no stability in that. So be careful how you use that time. And if you are young and have a lot of time, then use it well. Maybe if like you're in school, high school, maybe even in college, you say, man, I'm on summer break. I'm just kind of bored. Well, wonderful. Use that time and use that time, invest that time into growing in your faith, into encouraging others, helping others, writing cards. Invest your time in others and in your spiritual growth. If you're like me, I'll get to me in a second. If you are married and without kids, use that time to grow in your love towards one another, because kids will somehow take your time. and so use that time to serve others. And you are kind of more free to do a lot of those things, to help others, and using your time and energy to do that. If you are a parent, man, use this time. And this is really kind of hitting me. Use this time to help your kids know who God is. We will never get these years back. And try to live with the mindset of, I don't want to regret the years that I had when my children were small and kind of had that moldable spirit. Use that well and really teach them to love the Lord, to love His word. Because once they're gone, you know, and they're gone. So be mindful of that time, knowing that even that time really goes by quick, and I can be a testament to that. If you're single, maybe how are you using your time to grow in your faith, to help others, to encourage them in the Lord? Think about how Paul used his life, Barnabas, to as a single person. There are a lot of wonderful blessings about the single life. There's a lot of great blessings of the married life, but make sure you use those things. Use those blessings for the Lord, and using that time the best you can, knowing that, man, life is short. Therefore, value your time. All right, well, I'll quit talking and let you speak. Is there anything that kind of jumped out at you or anything that kind of discussion-wise through verse 6.
Hey, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
I've always heard the analogy, or one I like a lot anyway, is somebody has like a long piece of rope and they put like a little piece of red tape at the very end of it and says this is a timeline of your life, and just imagine the rope goes on forever. And then he talks about how, you know, all the things we try to do in this life, like, oh, better save until I get to retirement right here. You know, and it looks so silly when you see that little red piece of tape on the end compared to the vastness of eternity. So I think that kind of goes along with what you're saying of this life seems so short in comparison to what is waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. Great thought. Great point. We get so wrapped up in the here and now and lose sight of eternity with God. How are we, what are we doing now to push that forward, thinking in that mindset? Anyone else?
Hey, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
I was just thinking, you know, of what Paul said to the Corinthians when he was talking about, you know, the reality of, you know, understanding the truth of what we can know about Christ and what he came to accomplish and what he in fact did accomplish. And then he spoke about the fact that if Christ has not been raised, if that was a farce, if that wasn't what it was cracked up to be, then we're fools for following him. And we should just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And so he's looking at the other side of the coin. If we have no truth, we all have the ability to see, walk through the graveyard as we bury loved ones who go on before us. We all understand the brevity of life. And so let's grab as much of it as we can. Whatever we have the desire to accomplish or the power to accomplish, let's get about the business of doing that, because anyone can see that you have X amount of time to get that done. And we see in this psalm where, you know, God is speaking about, you know, when you speak of everlasting to everlasting, you're talking about never, no beginning, no ending. When you speak about him saying, I'm the Alpha and the Omega, that is a beginning and an end, and that has to do with his creation. There was a beginning of it. There will be an end of it. I am that. And he speaks about the reason why life is brief, is, as you mentioned, is because of our sin. And so we should understand that, and we should recognize that we only have X amount of time, and it's an uncertainty. In fact, Jesus says, don't look out beyond today, because you do not know. You know, James mentions that as well. You know, don't make these far-reaching plans. I mean, we have to do some sort of planning, but he said, don't invest too much in that, because you don't know if you're going to wake up to see tomorrow. And so understand the truth that God has made available to us, that life is short and death is certain because of our sin, but he is everlasting, and we have an opportunity to be a part of that everlasting life. We have a beginning, but we will have no end. We will either have everlasting life, or we will just have an everlasting existence separate from him, which is not anything to count as an accomplishment, obviously.
Sure.
And so I think it's a very sobering thing. And you think about how so many, maybe well over a million people, they didn't lose sight of the brevity of life. They lost sight of the reason that they were wandering in the wilderness, to make the point that I am your God. I will take care of you. I will lead you to the promised land, and you will be with me forever. If you'll just keep that in mind, that you are utterly dependent upon me, and I am utterly willing to have you as my dependents because I love you. You know, if you can just keep that understanding and not let these temporary trappings get in the way. And what did they do? Even the second generation, almost immediately, they began looking at the nations round about them and being attracted by the same things that we all still struggle with. Anyway, I'm sorry, that was a little long-winded, but.
Good. Well, that's just the first six verses. So that was really good. Let's keep going. I love 7 through 12, where he talks about kind of why life is so short. So starting in verse 7, for we are brought to an end by your anger, by your wrath we are dismayed. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins, in the light of your presence. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger and your wrath according to the fear of you? So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom. All right, so 7 through 11 really speaking about God's anger, God's wrath. So the reason they are so quickly perishing is because God is angry with them, and they don't stand a chance against God's anger. And if you think about it, did God have the right to be angry with them? Well, again and again, he had the right. And again, you think about the generation that Moses is writing to. It's because of their sins that they are in the wilderness and they are not in the promised land. So it's because of their lack of faith that they are dying. And if you think about their time in the wilderness, how many times does God get angry at them? Well, probably whatever 38 times 365 is, that's how many times, he got frustrated with them. But you think about how much they complained. You think about their desire to go back to Egypt. Well, I don't want to be in this wilderness. Let's go back to Egypt. At least we had, you know, stuff there. They forget about how they were slaves. So you think about all the stupid reasons why they wanted to go back, and they were untrusting to God. So yeah, God gets angry with them. And the reason God's angry, verse 8, is because of their sins. And you think about this verse, a very humbling verse. It says, all their iniquities are set out before the Lord. That's a very humbling thought, to think about your sins are just kind of all spread out there in front of God. And included in those sins are those secret sins. The ones that you think nobody knows about. Well, God knows, and he's looking at them. So all of those things are brought to light in his presence. And the reason we die is because of sin. So sin's power is death, and sin has that power. So that's why we die. And then verse 9, we finish our years just kind of like a sigh. So again, you can just think of a sigh. And that's how we finish our years. And then you think about in their time, and it hasn't changed too much, about the average age of death. It says, well, usually about 70 people die. And if God gives you a lot of strength, you may make it to 80. And I say, well, I know some people older than that. Well, okay. Thank God for that. But think about their life. And you say, well, the pride of their life is labor and sorrow. So that sounds like a wonderful life, right? Full of labor and sorrow. So all the things that we accomplish or are able to accomplish here on earth, what does it amount to? Not much. I did this exercise yesterday, and it's kind of thinking about all the toil that I exerted yesterday. And you think about just kind of your daily activities. And maybe yours is a little bit different than mine, but I spent some of my day yesterday picking up toys. Some may have been mine, some may have not been mine. But then what's going to happen today? Well, probably there'll be toys to pick up again today, and we're grateful for that, grateful to have them and to enjoy them. I got to clean yesterday only for things to get dirty again, and I'll get to do that again sometime. And then feeding the kids, which 95%, and that may be a generous number to my advantage, Misty feeds the kids, and that they rejoice for that. But I fed them peanut butter and jelly sandwiches yesterday. But the sad thing is they got hungry again today. I have to feed them again, feed myself again. So again, you just kind of think of all the things that we do. We just have to repeat. I gave them baths, or they got baths. Well, they'll probably have to do that again too. So it is all the years, just kind of toil and vanity, and soon our life is gone and we will fly away. So looking at verse 11, kind of wrapping this section up, 7 through 11, you look at who understands the power of God's wrath or the power of God's anger. He's angry. There's nothing you can do to stop that. And therefore, here's the big takeaway. that we've already really kind of talked about is verse 12. So since all those things are true, 7 through 11, so therefore teach us to number our days. So after understanding the anger of God and how we are not here very long, hopefully that should teach us something. And these are maybe some things that we don't like to think about, or they're not the most fun things to dwell on. But man, they will give us wisdom if we do decide to do that. There was the idea of teach us to number our days. I remember this illustration of and a guy said, now imagine you have this big old jar, and in the jar you put marbles in it. And if you want to just go all out, you put in, you go kind of from 70 to 80, right? That's kind of the lifespan that he mentioned. So we'll just take the average of 75 and pretend, okay, 75 years is this is what, you know, what we get for illustration. And he says, okay, so maybe just do a marble for every month. Now, I don't know how many marbles that would be. But every month you take out a marble. And, you know, when you're 10, you're like, man, this thing's full of marble. I'm not making a dent in this. But then you reach what would be like 40 and say, man, this is kind of halfway gone. And then you just see that jar just getting lower and lower and lower. And it's you're really thinking that, man, maybe I just don't have as much life to live. And then at the very end, you've lost your marbles. Now, that was a great punchline. Anyway, I hope y'all are laughing at that. So teach us to number our days. Again, if you only have a certain amount of days and you can never buy more, how are you going to use those days? The quicker we can learn this lesson, and the quicker we figure out, man, time is so valuable, we're going to say, I need to use every day, every month to the fullest, and to help others come to the Lord, to encourage others in the faith, as we talked about this morning. But the more we value our time, the less we are going to waste our time. So really, Moses is trying to get us think about how short your life is. Therefore, you will learn to value the days that God gives you. And then you will get to present to God a heart of wisdom. If we never think about death, then we're just going to like live day to day. Maybe we're wasting a lot of our time that we shouldn't be if we think about this principle. So how we use our time is a reflection of how wise we are. And I don't know if I've ever really put that together before, but don't you see that in this verse? That the way we value our time is an indicator of how wise we are using that. And if we're just kind of wasting it in different ways, and I'll let you fill in the blank on that, well, maybe we need to number our days a little bit better and to value and appreciate the days that God has given us. So just real quickly, and I'll let you comment. Again, thinking about Moses' generation, and this was helpful for me to think about as he is kind of teaching this psalm or this song to them. Put your place in place of someone in the wilderness who was older than 20 years old and knowing that you're going to be in that wilderness for 40 years because those spies were in the promised land for 40 days. So I'll give you a year each day they were there to live. How would they use their time knowing they're not going to live another, you know, I don't know, 20 years? I'll say this happened 20 years. So what would they do? So you think, how would they be spending their time? Well, probably, I think it'd be safe to say they would be teaching their children. This is extremely important for you to trust God and for not to doubt God. It's extremely important to serve God all the days of your life. Maybe they would have conversations about, this is what I did. These are some of my mistakes that I have made. And I want you to learn from my mistakes so you don't repeat them. So that God won't be frustrated with you like he was with my generation. Can't you imagine them saying to their kids, the most important thing is to be faithful to God and to encourage them, encouraging others to stay faithful to God, to stay true to God. Maybe describing and telling their children, this is what God did in Egypt. And these are the amazing things. These are the amazing stories that God did and how we can rely upon him and trust him. Telling their children the power of God, going through each of those plagues or crossing the Red Sea, and then those powerful events where Moses told us, watch and see the salvation of the Lord. But don't you see many of those lessons for us as well? Since we have learned to number our days, how are we using them? And I hope we are teaching our kids, our grandchildren, our friends, whoever, to, I don't have much time left, so I want to tell you about the most important thing in my life. And I want to talk to you about Jesus and how important he is. And to not put those things off. So just the importance of numbering our days and valuing the time that we have here. Comments or thoughts on through 12? All right. Well, I guess we'll keep on going. All right. So notice how Moses kind of wraps up this song. I think verse 12 would be a great ending, right? Teach us to number our days and just kind of leave on that. But you think about, especially 7 through 11, about God's anger because of verse 8, our sins, our iniquities that are laid out before him. But you really have this prayer to God. It says, return, O Lord, how long have pity on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us and for as many years as we have seen evil. Let your work be shown to your servants and your glorious power to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. So you think about how God had every right to be frustrated with these people who are continually complaining, continually committing idolatry, who are continually wanting to go back to Egypt. He's like, man, I wanted to wipe this generation out 2 or 3 times. but Moses kept interceding for them. But this is Moses' request. Even though God had every right to wipe them out and to be so frustrated with them, what does Moses ask God? He says, I want you to return to us. And this is the idea of, I want you to bless us. Kind of God returning, God being with his people is the idea of blessing them. And he asked God, please have pity. Please have compassion on us and help us. Now, verses 14 and 15 is Moses goes into that. How much does he want God to bless them? Not just a little bit, right? Satisfy us in the morning with your loving kindness. So if you kind of think of verses 1 through 12 as a day, you would say, man, that was a rough day. And you think about just kind of putting life in perspective and says, now that day is gone. So in the morning, dear Lord, I want you to bless us again so that we may sing for joy and be glad all of our days. Make us glad according to the days you have afflicted us and the years we have seen evil. So you kind of think of a scale or a balance. So you have wickedness over here and sin and God's anger and frustration. And so you have, you know, it's really heavy in this direction. Well, I want you to counterbalance that, you know, weigh down the joy and gladness so it kind of evens out. I think that's kind of the picture that you have here. God is the only one you can ask this to. Can you think of, and someone made an illustration in this way, where you say you owe the bank $10,000 because you are being very foolish and very selfish with your money and what you bought with things, and you have this great debt, and then you call the bank and say, I was wondering, look, I know I deserved all those kind of notices that you've been sending me in the mail, and man, I did really mess up, but I was wondering if you could just kind of forgive that debt for me and then give me $10,000 instead. What bank would go for that, right? Not a bank that would stay in business very long. But that's essentially what Moses is asking God here. I want you, even though we deserved the punishment that you gave us because of our iniquities and our secret sins, please bless us instead. Give us joy. Give us gladness in the morning. Isn't it amazing how much God loves us and desires to bless us? I want you to think about this passage. It's found in Hosea chapter 11, verse 8 and 9. Hosea 11, verses 8 and 9. And you remember the story of Hosea, where he goes out and has to marry someone who's basically going to be unfaithful to him. And that is very parallel to how God's children were married to God through this covenant, and yet they decided to marry other gods and be with them and desert their first husband being God and doing all these terrible, wicked things. And then how would you respond to that? You know, and I think the marriage relationship is really helpful for me in understanding the gravity of idolatry and how just frustrating and wicked and angry that is to the one who's being cheated on. Well, you think of how God would respond to that. And he does respond, saying, man, I'm going to teach you a lesson. I'm going to help you understand not to do that. But then notice these verses. This is Hosea 11, verse 8 and 9. This is how God responds. How can I give you up, O Ephraim? Another way of saying Israel. How can I give you up, O Israel? How can I surrender you? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboim? And basically that's a reference to how can I make you like Sodom and Gomorrah? How can I just rain down fire and brimstone on my people Israel? It says, my heart is turned over within me. All my compassions are kindled. And remember, that's what Moses asked in verse 13, have pity on us. All my compassions are kindled. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not destroy Ephraim again. Why? It says, for I am God and not man. That's the difference. We would have been through with these people, especially by this time, with their history of keeping deserting God and following after these false gods. Now, infuriating that would be, but God is not like man. God desires to bless, and God desires to have compassion, and that's just kind of kindled up within him. I love that idea. I am God. I am God, not man. And so that this idea of Moses' relationship with God, you really see that closeness here, that Moses is not afraid to ask God to bless his people, even though they deserve every bit of what they got. So then verse 16, again, kind of Moses on this same idea, may we see your works. Now what is Moses asking? What works does he want to see? Well, in context, he's talking about, I want to see God bless us. I want to see the working of God's hand and how much he will bless us. So it says, may we see your works. Maybe the idea of, may we see all these blessings being overflowed, poured out on us. So Moses wants this generation to see God's love toward them and not just that righteous anger, that just anger that God has for them. And then verse 17, this is how he ends this powerful psalm. May God confirm the works of our hands. And that's a very helpful thing to think about. May God confirm the works of our hands. The NET version that I kind of look at quite a bit, it says, make our endeavors successful. Yes, make them successful. For whatever endeavor or work that our hands find to do, who's going to make that successful or not? That's really not up to us. That's God's territory. So without God, everything we do is going to be in vain unless he decides to bless it. So Moses knows that, and that'd be helpful for us to keep in mind. It is God's choice whether what we do will be successful. So Moses is asking God again, just another way of saying, may you bless us. So teach us to number our days. We know we deserve your righteous anger towards us, but even though we know you are God and not man, so please bless us instead. Thoughts or comments through the end of the psalm, through anything you want to say in Psalm 90.
Hey, Patrick.
Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say that in verse 16, where it's talking about showing his deeds, and specifically to the children, I think it's more of, to your point earlier, about how they need to teach their children God's deeds. And so it's like God's giving them manna, God's providing for them. They really don't have to do anything in the wilderness. They don't have to work. So it's like, help these children to see God's blessings and see his deeds and really be thankful for that.
Very good. Yes. Did I cut you off? Okay.
Well, I was going to make another point too.
Good. Good.
It's like, teach us to number our days. We were all talking as a family, and it's like the people in the wilderness, even though they were condemned to die, God still gave them a chance to repent. And so instead of killing them all right there after they sinned, after they said, we're not going into the promised land, he gave them 40 years to contemplate and think about him and ask for repentance. And I think that's also an idea, like, teach us to number our days and to realize what we have done and to ask for forgiveness and repent. Maybe another point to take from that.
Great. Yeah, excellent comment. Good. Anyone else? All right. Don't mean to cut anyone off if anyone has a comment they'd like to make.
Patrick?
Yes, sir.
You know, when he talks about the secret sin, you don't realize when they left Egypt, how many little idols they carried with themselves. And it seems like they were trying to hide it from God, yet God was able to see that.
Yes. Yeah, great point. That they took the idols that they had from Egypt with them, and it's a great reminder, you're not hiding that from God.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and how many idols do we have? You know, maybe not physical, but how many things do we put before God in our lives? So it's a very, very powerful lesson for us. Well, all right. Well, I guess we will we'll conclude our lesson there. I think it's 6 o'clock, so time is up. The bell is rung. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and I'll give you just a very quick update. I'll go ahead and close the recording.